I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Darren Driver and I'm joined today by Josh Hobbs and Adam Elliott. Adam, how you doing, brother? How are you feeling about football at the moment? In fact, I think we're recording this just after the Brentford game, right? So the thing that you're referring to there is that you're delighted that Leeds United were beaten 5-2 by Brentford. So yeah, how do you reflect on the weekend's game? Because we didn't get a chance to record a review, so I'm going to put you through that torture right now.
If anything, I'm happy that Diego Llorente is now probably going to be dropped, right? That's probably the only good thing that came out of that game. But otherwise, I mean, was it a 5-2 game, really? Probably not. We weren't great, and I think they deserved to win, but we probably didn't deserve to get battered in the way that we did either. And at the end of the day, the referee was quite poor, but it was still a below-par performance. And at the moment, we're not doing great, are we? Three games on paper that didn't look too bad, and we've got 1 point out of them. So we need to rectify that with Nottingham Forest.
We really do, whenever that should happen. Hobbsy, reflect on the Brentford game, because I always enjoy when you do a rewatch that you put your commentary direct into the All Stats group chat, so I kind of got a handle on the sort of things you might say. But what did you make of Adam's comments just now that it wasn't a 5-2 game? Because Adam, I don't know if you saw the scoreline at the end of the game, mate, but it was definitely 5-2.
I mean that's what I would say. It wasn't a 5-2 game. We were not very good in the first half. It's a really strange thing, because before they scored, I was thinking to myself, Leeds look pretty on top, although not actually really creating anything. It's just, we just had a lot of pressure on them. And I thought our rest defense looked good. So we were winning the ball, back on halfway quite a lot. And our center backs, apart from those first couple of minutes where both Llorente and Koch both got pressed and kicked the ball straight to one of their players, I thought that they sort of started all right. And then suddenly they then started getting behind us quite a lot, hitting Tony, getting balls in behind our centre backs. They got pressure on us a bit, and then they get that throw in and win the penalty. And then I think we're kind of chasing the game ever since after that. And they're a good team in that aspect where they're able to, go direct and exploit the gaps. Because even when we then did sort of throw the kitchen sink at them and start to create some chances, they were always looking like they would create enough big ones the other end to score more. And despite all the play that we had, all the really big chances in the game, bar the Pat and Rocker chances, which are only about a minute before we score our second goal anyway, all the big chances went to them.
And I guess that's worrying signs, isn't it? Because although we were on top and we had possession in that first portion of the game, I always felt Brentford were comfortable. I didn't really feel like we were causing them any problems.
We were getting to the edge of their box, and then it was just sort of, they were just absorbing it.
Yeah.
There was only that Gelhardt shot where he kind of like takes a snap outside of the foot shot just inside that. I don't know if it was on the turn, but it got dinked to him, and then he sort of like jumps and shoots outside the foot. It actually was very close to going in. But that's like our best chance to speak of in the first half, and you wouldn't necessarily call it a great chance.
Any team that's going to be really good at soaking us up and hitting us in transition is going to cause us a lot of problems. I think that's a kind of definite blueprint for how to beat us is to do.
I would say that Brentford are particularly good at that.
They are.
In that they are very well organised, and they had the perfect outlet in Tony. Mm. And he also had had an incredible game.
Mm, he did.
Because they had him in terms of like being able to hold the ball up, compete with our centre-backs, just give them a nightmare.
Yeah.
And then you have two runners in Lewis Potter and Mbeumo who are able to stretch it. And you've just got a bit of you've got a nightmare for a defence like ours to deal with when we're trying to push forwards.
Definitely. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Brentford 5-2.
Stop it.
But I just wanted to put Adam off where he was wanting to go. So I thought of this on the flight, which was excellent improvisation on my part, I feel. So this is our annual state of the squad address and our chance for us to look at how things are looking in the Leeds United squad now that the transfer window is closed and we've got a better idea of what's been done. So we're going to start with the outgoings. So the outgoings this summer were Rafinha to Barcelona, Calvin Phillips to Man City, and those were permanent signings. Leif Davis was also a permanent signing to Ipswich for just over £1 million. Kiko Casilla and Lorenz de Bock, we finally managed to get those two off the wage bill. Both went on free transfers. Liam McCarron went to Stoke City, and then there were a number of loan transfers, so Dan James to Fulham, Tyler Roberts to QPR, Helder Costa to Etihad Club, Charlie Cresswell to Millwall, Jamie Shackleton to Millwall, Ian Paveda to Blackpool, and Matthias Burgess back to Ibiza. So Calvin Phillips, Rafinha and James are the big outgoings and the more notable outgoings there. Is this goodbye to James Hobsey, or is there a way back for him?
I don't know how much he will want to come back after everything that's happened. I think it sounded like we were trying for it to actually be a permanent deal in the first place. I.e. when we thought we were getting Hakpo, we thought, okay, sell James, get Hakpo, and that sort of balances the books or gets it somewhere close. Then the Hakpo deal wasn't happening, and James we still made happen with Fulham even before everything else fell through with Dieng. And I think that Fulham kind of changed it from a permanent to a loan, and it sounds like with an option. So my gut will be that he will go, even if he doesn't end up at Fulham. I feel that he probably won't be happy to come back. Mm. And it's, you know, sounds like the club are ready to move on from him. They still want to get Hakpo, even though I'm not convinced that they will.
Adam, how early in Dan James' time at Leeds were you ready to move on from him?
You really are asking the horrible questions today, Darren. I'll be honest, yeah, I don't rate him as a footballer, and I think most people on this podcast don't either. So I'm not really that sad to see him go. I felt like he broke a lot of our attacks, so it's not really a huge issue for me personally. It does sound like now we've kind of burned bridges a little bit, even though Marsh has made some comments in the last week or so, basically clarifying that he wouldn't mind seeing James back at the club next summer. But yeah, it doesn't feel like that's likely. I agree with Hobbs. He probably will get a move somewhere next summer, whether that's another loan or a permanent move away. What remains to be seen, Fulham or whoever, but I don't think he'll be here. So I'm pretty happy to see the back of him.
And you know, back in the days when we finished mid-table in the Championship every year, I used to say, all I want to see is a team that tries hard and players that work hard, and it turns out I want more than that. But the rest feels a bit like a squad tidy up to me. What about you, Adam?
Yeah, because there's been more outs than ins, hasn't there? It's just been a good trimming of sort of the fat of the squad and the excess players. There's still a few players I would have got rid of, to be honest. There's people like Alfie McCalmon who are still knocking about, and he shouldn't really be playing 21s or 23s football, whatever you want to call it. At his age, he really should be going out and playing games. So there's probably a few more we would have liked to have done, but we didn't quite manage to do. But in general, it's been a really good tidy. It probably got the wage bill down a little bit, probably just made the squad a bit leaner, whilst also bringing the floor of that.
We seem to have increased the number of usable players and got rid of those that we had no intention of using, would probably be how I'd read it. So, Hobbsy, we've finally raised some decent money on outgoing transfers, and primarily from the Rafinha and Calvin Phillips sales. And there are, I guess there are questions about the fees for those, but I think we've spoken about that already. But a lot of people I've seen are unhappy with the net spend. Where do you fall on this debate?
I'm not bothered about net spend or anything like that. I'm bothered about how it's spent.
Yeah.
So I generally think that the money that we've brought in, we've spent well this summer. So I'm happy with that. And I understand that our previous two summers were just incomings with no outgoings.
Yeah.
And that obviously can't continue for the financial health of the club and for financial fair play as well. So I don't mind it. I think I'm surprised that we weren't able to do more than we were. And I'm a bit confused. And there was obviously an article in The Athletic this week about like what's going on like with Leeds' finances. I felt that didn't really answer the questions. I think it perhaps the answer is just we're in a bit of a stasis, however you say that, like where we need like a takeover to happen, because it feels like both of our main shareholders can't quite decide on where money's coming from or whatever. Because it's just confusing that this idea that in order to have done another signing we needed somebody else to go, it kind of doesn't feel like it makes sense. So
yeah,
but I'm not angry about it. I'm confused about it.
But if you look over the how much have we spent over the three summers in combination? It's a really significant sum, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was about 250 million, but then we've obviously brought in we've brought in 100 million this summer. I still thought that we could do like one more big signing, but apparently we couldn't.
Yep. But overall, both happy with the outgoings, Hobbsy?
Yeah, I think the right players went out that needed to go out. I mean, I think I understand there are people arguing against James going. I really get that.
Yeah, I do.
Personally, I feel the only thing that we will actually miss from him is his pressing and the fact that he's very available. I don't think that any of the younger players are actually a step down from him in terms of actual quality. I would make more of an argument, in fact, that given everything that happened in the window, the one that I could have kept around would have actually been Roberts, which is controversial to say. I don't think that potentially would have been good for him, because I think he probably needed the break from Leeds, given the sort of toxicity around him. But it's just funny that now he's kind of the profile that our squad is kind of missing a bit, because I think he could have been closer to Bamford than anybody else we've got.
Yeah, I would broadly agree with that. Adam, you've already said that you felt there were a couple more could have gone out, but overall, are you happy with the outgoings?
Generally speaking, obviously, I'm pretty gutted about Rafinha still, but we kind of all expected that to happen. But yeah, in terms of outgoings, I mentioned McCalmon. I would have also said maybe Klaassen, but I think the reason he's not gone on loan is partly because we want to see him push into that number two spot and stay there now that he's got Rob Les breathing down his neck, but also because of Van den Hooyvel's injury. I think if that hadn't happened, there was maybe a chance he could have got a loan and got some proper first team minutes, which would have been a good thing for him in his career. But yeah, generally speaking, pretty good. Now we're kind of left with a squad where, besides a couple of players, I'm pretty happy with most of it. I'm sort of in the categories of I really like some players, I quite like some players, or I'm kind of indifferent to others. There's only a couple that probably fall into the would I see the back of you tomorrow? Yes, now. So that's quite a good thing, I would say.
Let's move on to the incomings. So Brendan Aaronson was brought in from Salzburg. Lewis Sinisterra brought in from Feyenoord. Tyler Adams was brought in from Leipzig. Rasmus Christensen from Salzburg. Mark Rocker from Bayern Munich. I still forget how to say this guy's name.
JB,
thank you. Darko JB was brought in from Manchester City. Wilfred Nyonto was brought in from Zurich, and Joel Robles was brought in from Real Betis on a free transfer. So overall, the spend is about 99 million. So, and we won't get too deeply into the individuals here because we'll end up repeating ourselves. But let's reflect on the general strategy for bringing people in, and whether we feel that the squad is overall better, stronger, bigger, more usable, more functional. So Adam, you first.
Yeah, so for me, the main thing this summer, the main takeaway is that the average age of the squad has come right down. Like every single outfield signing has been 25 and under. The only signing we've made over 25 is Joel Roberts, who's a backup goalkeeper and probably something we needed in terms of experience cover on the bench. But yeah, like a lot of these players, obviously being under 25, now have the room to grow, to maybe even have resale value. There's a lot of flexibility and variation in most of the players as well. So if Jesse Marsh leaves, for example, then we still have the players who could be adaptable, maybe versatile enough to play in other systems as well. And that's all really good stuff for me, Darren. I do think that the squad is stronger, but in general, than it was last season, even though we've lost someone as good as Rafinha. I think the floor has been raised, as I mentioned before, even if the ceiling's come down a little. And that is the main thing. Like, we've got the average age down, and we've also improved the quality of the depth in our players. We've, like you said earlier, got more usable players that we could actually play now, rather than the fringe players being a bunch of 21s and 23s players who are maybe not very first team ready. We've now got more of them, and I feel a lot more comfortable with the sort of depth in most positions besides maybe a couple now.
Not a lot to add to that, to be honest. Well summarised.
Well done, Adam. Okay, let's move on to goalkeepers, of which we have three in and around the first team squad. So Ilan Meslier, Christopher Claassen. I keep wanting to call him Chris Christopherson, but that's not his name, is it? And finally, Joel Robles, who Adam's just referred to. So the way I look at this is we've got a clear number one and two who will only ever play if there's an injury. So I guess with that in mind, how do you think Meslier's doing so far this season, Hobbsy?
I think he's had a good start to the season. I think the Southampton game, I could argue that perhaps he could have done better with even both the goals, to be quite honest. But he's also been fantastic in pretty much all the other games, and I don't believe that we win the Wolves game without his saves. So yeah, really good start to the season, and I think he had a tough season last season where he was just exposed ridiculously. He has already had to deal with some big chances this season, but I would say so far he seems to have a little bit more cover.
I agree.
But I just expect him to continue as he is, where he's a really good one-on-one keeper, and that is where I think he really excels. What I want to see from him this season is his kicking to continue to improve, because I think that there are things that I particularly noticed. I think it was in the Everton game. Yeah, the Everton game. He had a few left footed. Oh no, wait. What's
right,
his weak?
Right, is right, right footed. Yeah. Is his weak?
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. A few right footed kicks that basically launched attacks for Everton.
Yeah.
Which was quite nervy. And yeah, I think we need him to improve his kicking, but I trust him as a shot stopper for the vast majority of the time.
I agree. With regards to his kicking, I agree, he does need to improve. And I think it's more with his left foot, it's really a case of consistency that needs to improve rather than anything else. But with his right foot, you're right, it was pretty shocking against Everton. So Adam, Do you think that we've got enough in the goalkeeping ranks if Melier should break?
Yeah, I do now. I really do. It's much better than it was last season. I was so worried about it. And then he got that injury against Wolves in like that key part of the season. We were all sort of bricking it at that point. But it was lucky that he was fine in the end. But yeah, we've got Robles, who's obviously experienced in the Premier League and La Liga. He's not played loads of games in his career for his age, but there's at least some actual backup there that's got some game time in the top flight under his belt. And Klaassen improved at the end of last season as well. So on that front, I actually think that goalkeeper's become one of our more stocked positions now. Like going forward, I am not as worried if Melier was to get an injury of, say, even 5 games. I think I'd worry if it was like 10, 15 sort of games, but I'm okay if it's the odd game now. And the main thing I think to say about goalkeepers is we finally lost the darkened cloud of Kassir from us now. And I think that's probably one of the best things to come out of this summer, but it's not really talked about, but finally his...
Yeah, you know, his dreadful goalkeeping and his antics and yeah, all the other stuff has gone with him. So that's obviously very positive news. And he will not be missed. Okay, let's think about defenders. So we've got a real number of defenders here. So I'm going to list them all for anyone who's... needs reminding. We've got Diego Llorente, we've got Robin Koch as centre-backs, we've got Pascal Strauch and Liam Cooper as centre-backs, we've got Junior Firpo at left-back, and Leo Hjelder's listed here as a left-back, although I think he's probably more comfortable as a centre-back. And then at right-back we've got Rasmus Christensen, Luke Ayling, Stuart Dallas and Cody Drame all listed. And I guess the one thing I would say is that for all that we've got a lot of players in the defensive positions, it doesn't feel like it's settled or balanced to me at the moment. And I guess I'd say that the fullback positions feel like an obvious area of concern to me, Adam, given some of the structural issues of this system, or the structural choices, let me name them choices rather than issues, actually. Some of the structural choices in this system, it does feel like fullbacks do get exposed a lot, though. So it does feel like an area of concern for me. So talk to me about how you feel we're doing in the fullback area.
Yeah, I still think we lack recovery pace kind of across the defence, really. But yeah, like you say, in the fullback area, it's almost even more important because they do get exposed. So if they have the sort of pace to get back, then that really does help. Mm. It doesn't really feel like we have many of that sort of profile in the squad. You'd say maybe Christensen and Drame may have some pace, but there's not much beyond that, especially in fullback areas. So yeah, that is definitely an area of concern. But my main concern is left back. Because even if Dallas comes back ahead of schedule and whatever, will he actually ever be the same sort of player again? After he's broken his thigh, I've heard some stories where players don't really recover well. They sort of lose all the strength in their leg, and then it becomes really difficult, especially for someone in his 30s as well. It remains to be seen whether he's actually going to be an option for us. And if he's not, then you're relying on Junior Firpo, who last season was very injury prone, and we already know sort of the issues around him beyond that as well from last season. And I don't really expect him to have, even if he stays fitter, much improvement there, maybe slightly, because he can't really go much worse. But I think that's definitely an area of concern. And for me, it feels really negligent from the club again to not sign a left back. We didn't even sign one for the 21s team, and we're still playing wingers there. And then in the first team currently, we've got Pascal Strauch playing in Firpo's absence, which is a centre back. So our options there are basically wingers and centre backs rather than an actual left back who could challenge Firpo for his starting berth. And that for me feels like a big issue. Another thing I would say on that is that if you have Pascal Strauch able to play as a left centre back, then you can take Diego Llorente out of the team, and then things like Brentford don't happen. So that's another, it fixes two issues. If you sign a left back, it sort of frees up Pascal, and it also gives Firpo a proper option behind him or even in front of him. So yeah, that's where I am definitely concerned.
Yeah, I agree. Hobbsy, before we move on to talk about the centre backs, I suppose it's worth reflecting that as well as being frequently kind of exposed in maybe one-on-one situations or overloaded at fullback, they're also in our attacking phases, they are the kind of primary source of width as well. So I'm wondering how you're feeling about the fullbacks that we've got in more attacking positions.
The funny thing is, Strauch's been like pretty impressive in that regard.
Yeah, he has.
Which is really strange. He's been progressing the ball like fantastically. Like here, the little group that we have on the left between Strauch, Rocker and Harrison, like they've got a really nice relationship between them. They get the ball high up a lot, We're seeing Strauch like play creative passes into the box for runners to attack. I think he played a really nice one into Aronson or Rocca quite early on in the first half against Brentford. Obviously it's his ball that's played across the box that Bamford just got ahead of for that big miss. I think Strauch's been way more impressive in that than would be expected, yep, considering his I want to say stature, but that's not really what I mean. Like his build, he doesn't look nimble enough to be able to do the attacking play that he's been doing. Okay, he's not sort of like making loads of overlapping runs, which perhaps just having that to add in there might worry defenders a little bit more, particularly if they're defending deep. I think that's something that was really noticeable on the right side. When Ayling came on at the weekend, suddenly you see Leeds have got an extra runner in the box and just a little bit more width, and he created a couple of chances by going on the outside. And Christensen in attack, we're kind of not really seeing very much at the moment, which is difficult. And Drame, I think he, like in the Championship, he was really attacking for Cardiff, and I think there's a bit of nerves with him, and he's kind of wanting to play it quite safe and really simplify his game. So he's not really running forwards.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go on to talk about centre backs. So Hobbsy, we've got a good number of centre backs. How what do you make of our options here, and what do you see as a decent blend between sort of attributes and among the players we've got?
I mean, I would love to see Cock and Strauch like build a partnership. Mm-hmm. That's what I would really like to see. I think that we're more likely to see Cock and Cooper start a partnership, and that sounds to be what Marsh has suggested in the more recent press conferences. I think I'd be happy to see that. I think that could be quite a nice partnership, where I think Cooper will attack the ball quite a bit, and I think Cock has the pace to cover him behind. That's what I hope would happen. But yeah, I think I would be a bit concerned if we get through this season and Strauch is not getting more minutes as a centre back, because I would start to think that we could lose him. Because I think someone could tempt him away with, we'll play you a lot at centre back. And I think that he could be the long term answer in that role. So I hope that he gets played more. And I think that he will, because I think we know that Cooper's gonna get injuries. I just hope that when that does happen, that it's Strauch that plays at left centre back and not Llorente.
Yeah, I suppose that Llorente is a bit of an elephant in the room right now. So let's just have a bit of a talk about where we are at with him, because Hobbsy, I think you've been on a bit of a journey with him.
I've admitted that. I think initially, I got drawn to his early performances as a passer.
Yeah.
And allowed that perhaps to colour my picture of him as like a ball playing centre back, and I kind of let go the obvious defensive issues because I thought he made up for them and he was solid enough in other aspects. As time's gone on, the defensive issues have become more and more magnified. The good stuff's disappeared. And you could also argue that he was just getting away with stuff before, so the goals were just not going in, so you just kind of forgive those errors, which I think is the case. I think now he's hit that point where those errors are so often and so glaring and costing us goals and points, so I don't believe that we struggle as badly as we did against Everton if we don't go a goal down. I think ultimately we will do eventually break them down and win that game. That's my belief. I can't prove that, of course.
No.
But I think, you know, going a goal down in 15 minutes against a team that came to just kill the game,
yep,
that's a nightmare.
It really is. It really is. And it all comes about because for some reason he's looking over the top of the East Stand at the point at which the pass is played, which is just the most bizarre.
I've watched it back so many times. He just gets like into panic mode, and that he gets drawn on a run where he could, rather than sort of assess the situation carefully and like really make the calm choice, he just starts running about like a nutter, yep, and then he's caught in a funny body position. He can't react.
Yep. Adam, have your say on Mr. Llorente, please. Well, no, not if you don't want to. You choose to say no, anything you like right about centre backs.
He's probably the fourth choice at the club. If not even fifth, because I'd rather play Ayling, to be honest. I just don't really want to see. He's probably the player that I now dislike the most within the Leeds squad, and I just think there's better options at both left and right centre back. So I don't think he should be anywhere near it. And I mean, if I had it my way, and I do like some of the options at the club, I agree with what Hobbsy said earlier with Koch and Strauch as a partnership. That would probably be something I'd like to see blossom. But maybe next summer, if we're thinking about really like nailing down this style of play even more, then you kind of want the players in defence further up the pitch, in my opinion. If you want to compress the space and you want to do a counter-press effectively higher up, then you kind of need more pace in your back line. So we probably need a faster, more well-rounded left-back, and we probably could do with at least one more fairly quick centre-back. So it's definitely something that I would be looking at next summer. And he will have a year left on his deal at that point, so I probably would just sell him.
I've been incredibly restrained around this discussion just now, so I'm going to continue holding my counsel and avoiding saying the things that are going around in my head.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Move on. So let's talk about our midfield double pivot. So to me, this feels like an area where we're definitely stronger than we were last season. We've got Tyler Adams, Mark Rocker, Matthijs Glick, arguably, although I think he's probably more of an advanced option. Adam Forshaw, Darko Jarby, and Sam Greenwood would be the options that Jesse Marsh seems to be angling towards there. So Hobbsy, how do you see the double pivot?
I think we're looking nice. I think that the Adams Rocker partnership is a stronger midfield than I think we had at any point in last season, or probably even the season before. I don't think we've had as good a midfield as this in the Premier League. I think with Adams, you've got pretty much all the defensive work that Phillips did. With Rocker, you've got a better passer and someone that keeps us moving forwards, which is really, really important in this system. And I don't know if people saw there was a graphic sort of going around Twitter the last few days that someone made with the highest progressive passers in the league so far, and they're all defenders apart from Rocker, like in the top 10. He's been breaking lines a lot, been getting the ball to our narrow wingers, to our 10. I think Rocker is absolutely fantastic, and I'm surprised that there are fans out there that don't quite get him. I think he's probably the best player that we've actually brought in.
I'm really, really enjoying him. It was also worth noting that Robin Koch and Pascal Strauch were both on that list too, isn't it? Is that right, Hobbsy? I've remembered that correctly.
I meant the list of progressive passes. Yes, Cork and Strout, were both on there. And the other thing to say on midfielders, we should probably also say that Archie Gray could be someone that gets some minutes at some point in the season. Jesse's obviously signified that himself. Yep. Whether that happens, I don't know. But
Adam, obviously going to give you a chance to say anything you want to say about in the midfield, but if Rocket and Adams are injured, who do you see as the next best pairing?
If you'd asked me before a ball was kicked this season, I probably would have said Forshaw and Click. But as you mentioned earlier, as you alluded to, Click's been used more advanced. And I actually do think he might be better there in this system. And now that James has left, you probably need another option in the attacking midfield spot. So possibly it's Forshaw and Greenwood, or even Forshaw and Jibe. Mm. Not 100% sure yet. We saw in the Cup that it was better when Forshaw was the one receiving from the defenders, and Greenwood was sort of playing a little bit further forward. But it's difficult because I don't think we have a profile super like Rocker. And I was going to ask you both, like, how do you actually profile Adam Forshaw within this team? Who's he the most like now? Would we say he's most like Rocker or Adams or somewhere in the middle? Like, what's his, like, next best role, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is he the guy that goes and chases the ball, or is he the one that progresses it?
I think he's kind of in between, because
I agree.
I would even say he's not even big progressor. He's like a circulator of the ball. So for me, I think he can do a decent job of the defensive work of Adams, but not, I don't think he's as much of a physical machine as Adams.
I think he's slightly less mobile, isn't he? But he's much tidier in possession.
And I think he would use the ball well, but I think if you had him in there instead of Rocker, we wouldn't be breaking lines as well.
Yeah, I agree.
As we do. I think, I actually think that JB has some potential to be that Rocker like player, but we need to see a lot more of him. At the end of the day, he's playing PL2 Division 2, so it's not a level that we can say is anywhere close to the level that he needs to be playing at, but I really do like what I see, and I think he has a chance to play this season. And I know that Greenwood's had a decent amount of people saying, oh, he's not really a midfielder, and I would have been one of those people initially, but I think ever since Brentford I have been impressed with him playing there, and I think that they clearly like the fact that he's a nice technical two-footed player who can drill passes. So I think they're trying to make him into that player that can play the passes through the lines. Whether or not that will happen or not remains to be seen, but I think that's what they want to achieve with him.
Adam, what do you make of this Greenwood in midfield?
Growing on it as well. I don't think he particularly was amazing against Barnsley in the Cup, but at the same time, I think there is probably potential there for him to improve in that regard. And I agree with the two-footed stuff. That is a really big asset for him, and he's quite nice at just in general striking through the ball. So in that regard, I think he has potential upside in that sort of role. And I agree with the Jibe stuff as well. He could almost be a more athletic version of Rocker, but it's maybe a year or two away before we're probably at that point. So for me, I'm not 100% sure what the best pairing is after Rocker and Adams, but I just assume that if one of them is injured, that Forshaw comes in for either of them, and you either ask him to do that sort of athletic ball winning stuff that Adams does just maybe not quite as well, or to do that passing stuff of Rocker, but just obviously not quite as well there either. For me, he is somewhere in the middle where he's sort of a more athletic Rocker slightly, and he's got a better turning circle. You know, he's got quite a tight turning circle and he's good at recycling the ball, but he's not perfect in either position. So even though I'm a lot happier with the midfield, we don't really have proper like-for-like cover. It is sort of Adam Forshaw for both positions is your best bet right now.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, let's move on to think about the attacking unit. So within this, we've got Brendan Aaronson, Sinisterra, Jack Harrison, Crescencio Somerville, Rodrigo, Nyonto, Patrick Bamford, Joe Gellhart, and Matthias Click. Adam, tell me about the line of three behind the striker. I think it's clear that Aaronson, Sinisterra and Harrison will become the three probably go-to starters there. But what do you make of the depth?
Well, yeah,
behind
I would include
those
a few other players actually that you haven't actually got on the list there on Transfermarkt. So I would include Perkins possibly if he could break through the season, and I would also include Gelhardt.
I did it. Gelhardt was there.
Was he? Did you mention him?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Oh, that passed me by. Yeah, okay, that's fine. but yeah, now we've kind of got quite a few options there that could play a few different roles within the system. So you've got in Perkins, Nyonto and Gelhardt, three options that can probably play at least three of the different attacking roles, even if it's up front or if it's in the sort of secondary line. So yeah, if Nyonto and Perkins, if at least one of those can step up, then I'm pretty happy in that area. It's just about whether they can make the step up. I'm hopeful at least one of them can, and if both can, then we're definitely well stocked in that area. And the main thing is we've lost one of the players that was breaking our attacks often, and I think that that's definitely good. And I quite like the general dynamic that we might have going forward of the three you just mentioned, Aronson, Sinisterra and Harrison. So, yeah, it does look quite promising, even though we've lost someone as good as Rafinha. And I would like to see Gelhardt used in one of these roles at some stage. And I was pretty pleased to see last week that Jesse Marsh mentioned it in his press conference. He talked about the possibility of Bamford and Gelhardt playing together and how Gelhardt's best work is actually coming like from a deeper position to attack the box. And I thought that was really interesting because that's how I would like to see him as well. Because he mentioned that he can play on the last line, but he's almost better on the secondary line. Like, you know, like we said, the three behind the striker. So off the right or just behind Bamford, I'd like to see him do a little bit more of that. So yeah, I'm pretty happy, to be honest. It's just that I think that a lot of people are concerned because basically all of our secondary players are really young. You've got Somerville, you've got Nyonto, Perkins, Gelhardt. Who else am I missing here? Yeah, that's probably it. So yeah, and then Click, as you mentioned, can probably play a couple of those positions too. So it isn't the most experienced, but it's quite exciting. And if at least a couple of these really take a step forward this season, then you're looking at a really, really promising attacking line for next season in particular.
Hobbsy, what are we missing out of that front three in terms of like attributes? I know there's a thing you've said quite a few times and I just wanted to unpick it a little bit.
Well, I think that there's runs in behind, I think is a bit of an issue.
Yep.
I think Aronson is someone that I think will go in behind. But I think a lot of them want it into feet. And I think that's not great when it's getting congested. Everyone wants it into feet and there's just no one manipulating the opposition defence. Then you're basically relying on whether or not we've got Bamford running behind. Sorry, I feel like you were wanting me to say something very specific that didn't have queued up.
No, it's fine. So something that you said a few times, and I wondered if you would come to it naturally, was that you feel that that we don't necessarily have players in that front unit who will manipulate the ball in tight spaces or who are very technical.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Of course, yeah. What I would say is I think Sinisterra is that guy.
Yep.
I think Harrison has shown he's capable of it in certain things. I think he's become a lot better at dribbling in the tighter spaces, but he still prefers to be out wide, and a lot of his chance creation this season has come from, even if he's had to sort of beat some players in order to do it, his chances have come from like whipping the ball across the goal. I think that Somerville, we know, kind of wants to dribble where he's got a bit of space to stand up a man and go at them. Yeah, I think that this system does require, like, for me, not so much maybe the manipulate the ball in tight spaces, because I think that a few of these players can do that. But what I wonder more is, are they good enough at the quick combinations,
sure,
the one and two touch passing?
Yeah.
Where you have to really quickly play something in order to break through a compacted line. That's where I think we're seeing that fall apart. And that is hard to do. The way that we're trying to play, it's like ping it into the striker who needs to do a one-touch layoff to the 10, and then someone else has to run behind. And that just, it all has to click.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then it just, you just lose the ball on the edge of their box regularly.
Yep, for sure. And we are seeing a lot of that so far this season. And Hobbsy, we are still short of a striker. So tell us what we miss when we don't have a decent pat backup in this system.
Well, we end up with no one on their last line who is pushing their defence back and who is able to receive back to goal without having to like drop off. Because I think in the Brentford game just gone, you will have noticed, I thought Gelhardt's link play was actually okay. Certainly it was a lot better than it was in the Barnsley game, where I thought he really struggled. But a lot of the link play that he did was actually him dropping off quite a bit from their defence. Whereas what I think we need to happen is that link play high up so that it's almost like happening behind their midfield line. So the ball's coming to our striker, who's able to then take it down, play it off to the 10, who's immediately like in front of their defence, and then we can do something from there. And Bamford is the only player, I think, in our squad who's capable of that. I think that Matteo Joseph is another player of that ilk, but I don't think I would say he's anywhere at the level right now. Gelhardt and Rodrigo are both players who would prefer to go wandering a bit more. And the other thing that Pat does, as well as that aspect of centre-forward play, is he's really good at running in behind. And I don't know if those other two want to run in behind as much. Nyonto, we will see. But it, to me, he looks like another one that wants to come and get it to his feet, turn and run with the ball, from what I've seen. And we don't even know yet how soon he's going to be considered like part of the match day squad.
Yeah, I just largely agree with what Hobbsy said about Bamford. I think that it's been pretty evident in recent games that he's come on that even if he hasn't necessarily scored, our attacks just looked more functional as soon as he's hit the pitch. You know, he makes those runs, he's really clever, but he also has that sort of both presence and mobility to pin centre-backs back and really give them a hard time. We talk a lot about, in this system, Marsh wanting his strikers to pin the centre-backs and have them backpedalling the other way, and no one else really does it in the way that Bamford does. So, yeah, it is definitely an issue, and I do think that with hindsight, actually loaning out Tyler Roberts might have been a mistake because he's probably the closest profile to Bamford in the squad still. And now what you're saying, the next best is probably Matteo Joseph, but he's in the 21s, so it's probably Rodrigo, and he doesn't really do that, as we know he doesn't from what we've seen so far. So, yeah, I do think that's a slight concern. Actually, that's a lie. Actually, I think it's a major concern if Bamford is injured. And I do think that striker and left-back are the two positions that we are light in and we do have a big hole in at the moment. So I am concerned and I hope that Bamford can stay fit. I think us having a decent to good season is contingent on how many games he can stay fit for. Even if he's not scoring with regularity, he just gives us more of a focal point.
We make more chances when he's on the pitch and we always have.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, we know he missed the big chance against Brentford, but ultimately I don't believe anybody else in the team gets on that in the first place.
Exactly.
Yep, I agree.
His movement is elite, isn't it? His movement in the box is genuinely really good, even if he misses chances. We talked about this in the group chat recently, but his movement in and around the area just keeps defenders busy at all times.
For sure. Okay, just before we wrap up, we'll just reflect a little bit on the contractual situation at Leeds. So we've got three players who've got 1 year left on their contract as we speak. So that's Luke Ayling, who's got 1 year, Joel Robles, who's got 1 year, and Adam Forshaw, who's got 1 year, but with an option for a second year. And then the rest of the players I'm about to mention are 2 years out from the end of their contract. So that's Liam Cooper, Matthijs Glick, Rodrigo, Stuart Dallas, Diego Llorente, Robin Koch, Pascal Strauch, Jack Harrison, and Cody Drame. And one of the things I noticed is that a lot of the players who are coming towards the end of the contract are around 30 and above 30, so that makes some sort of sense. And then we've got some younger players, Koch, Strauch, Harrison, and Drame, who are a couple of years out. So who do you see as the priority players among that group, Adam?
It's mainly the four that you just mentioned at the end there, but primarily it's Koch, Strauch and Harrison. I really don't want to lose Strauch probably the most in particular, then Harrison probably second. And like Hobbsy alluded to earlier, there's a worry with Strauch that if he doesn't get enough game time this season in his proper position, that he could look to move on. So if I was to tie down anyone to contracts today, it would be Strauch, Harrison, then Koch, then probably Drame if he fancies it. But I think with him, it's kind of a case of if he gets enough game time this season, he might want to stick around. But if Ayling and Christensen are both ahead of him now for the foreseeable, even Dallas, if he somehow comes back and is quite, you know, strong, then he's going to look at not very much game time. He's probably going to want to move on next summer. But the rest of them, without being awful, I'd either look to sell in their final year or move on when they're out of contract, probably, apart from maybe Forshaw, who I probably would extend by 1 year just to give us another option in midfield just for one more season. But everyone else, I'm not as fussed by. Like Liam Cooper, I would happily let him see out his contract here, but that I wouldn't really extend it beyond this point. And I don't want to upset people who are listening, but it's just at the same time, you've got to think about the ages of most of these. And as Darren mentioned, a lot of them are sort of 29 to 32, I think, everyone on that list. So you don't want to be giving them contracts, especially the injury prone ones, because they're already declining at this point, a lot of them. So you just have to be really careful of that. And with players like Llorente and Rodrigo, even though Rodrigo has shown some signs of improvement at the start of the season, if he's got a year left on his deal next summer, I just don't see the point in keeping him when he's 32.
Hobbsy, what do you make of this? Some of these players have been fantastic servants to the club. And I guess it's a question of asking how... We've got to not be sentimental about this, right? It's about asking realistically, asking the question about what they can continue to offer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be very sad about all of Ayling, Forshaw, Cooper, Click, Dallas moving on. But it does have to come soon. Did we say Cooper has one or two?
Two.
Yeah, I think I would let that go, see where he's at the end of this season. They would maybe give him a year or something if they felt that he was still an important person to have around. Ayling feels like someone that I just want to be around forever.
I agree.
Because of who he is, I think for me, we know Cooper's been the captain. But I would say that Ayling feels as much like the captain as Cooper has been. I think maybe because Cooper's had a lot of injuries over the years, so Ayling has captained the team so many times. But he stands out for, you know, the way that he played in that promotion season post Forest away, where he fronted up and then just played like a man possessed for that time. Mm. And then in the first season back in the Premier League, he was just amazing.
But even on Saturday, when he got his beautiful new nose, he showed that he's still got things to offer.
Exactly. And that's why I think I don't think they will push him out the door. I think that Drame has to take some pretty big steps forward to be considered ahead of him, even if we think that he might be the future. I think that Ayling is still capable of a lot more than him at the moment, and maybe more than Christensen, although I think we can assert the fact that Christensen's not had a great start to the season. Ayling didn't have a great season last season, but we know that he's capable of much more, and what he showed on the weekend was much more. So there is still potential that he keeps himself around for another season as well.
That contract would have to be done pretty reasonably soon, wouldn't it, you would think?
Yeah, I think that it's like the situation with Alioski. He obviously moved at the end of that season, but it sounds like they kept negotiating with him all along. So I think we would probably be able to do a similar thing with Ayling if we wanted to, even though, you know, he left. But I think if we wanted to get Ayling to stay at the end of the season, we probably could.
Yeah, fair. Okay, that feels like a pretty comprehensive look at the state of play in Leeds United's squad. So, yeah, feeling much healthier. And
can I ask a quick question of you both?
Please do.
What would you rate our window now out of 10? Based off everything we just said, ignoring the contracts, just the ins and outs in the window.
I remember you tweeting about this on deadline day, and I thought we were getting Dieng at this time. And I tweeted it was 7 out of 10 with Dieng, because I didn't love him as a player, but I at least felt that he filled that striker spot. Since we don't have that striker spot filled and the left back not filled, even though I really like a decent amount of our business,
yeah.
And I haven't really talked about Sinisterra a lot, who I think is brilliant, yeah. And I love. I feel like I've got to give it like 6 to 6.5, which maybe feels harsh, but I just, you can't have two glaring holes in the squad like that, which leave us potentially open to the season like unraveling. So I mean, that's not to say that will happen, but you're taking that risk, so I can't give it much higher than that, which is a shame, because halfway through the window I was thinking, hey, we might be on for like an 8 or 9 out of 10 kind of situation here.
Yeah, I agree. It's a 6 for me, and it's exactly the same reasons that and I think we've said on this podcast before, only having one professional left back at the club is not what a serious football club does. And it's a huge gap, and I agree that if Patrick Bamford has another season like he did last season, we're going to come up against all the same issues that we did last year, and I would have expected and hoped that the board and the football side of the club would be able to mitigate against that risk, and they've either chosen not to or have prioritised using the funds elsewhere. So for all that I agree that we've done some really significant and valuable work on the squad, and I think it is in a much better place, the window
totally
could definitely have been better.
What you just said, it does feel to me like a stopgap at a striker and at left back would have been totally fine. I don't understand that why we haven't got a warm body in either of those positions or both of those positions. And I do agree, I think it's about a 6.5 out of 10, and it had the potential really to go to that 8+ sort of region, but we didn't in the end. And that is a real shame, because it is just two positions that are really holding us back from being higher.
For sure. Okay. Good work. Thanks, guys. We'll be back on the Patreon feed with our under-21s, 23s, aren't we, podcast towards the end of the month. But until then, everybody, enjoy the week ahead, and we will speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.